My name is Arnie Ohox, and this is the second forum of this week, July 22nd. And the title of this forum is Naming Children, Whose Are They Anyway? And we will hear some interesting information on the naming of children from a legal point of view, what that implies, and also some implications of that, of how we raise our children and how we treat them. Forum panelists tonight are Laverne Rieke, who is our lawyer in residence for a couple weeks and is doing a series this week that is dealing with a number of family related issues in terms of law, and Rich Anderson, who is with us this week, has a number of resources he can draw on, and tonight we'll be sharing with Vern in the discussion of some of the ways we perceive our relationship to our children and how that works out and how we raise them and deal with them. Again, the forums are your times for conversation. We hope that you have come ready to be interested in the subject and share your ideas. Come open with questions, and be ready to talk to one another, not just to those who are presenting some information here. Any and all ideas that you might have or feelings that you might want to express are welcome in the forum. Again, we will limit it to 1 hour so that we all know where we stand with that. And we encourage you to participate in terms of just sharing opinions and listening to one another. So it's conversation that we're after, any kind of dialogue and interest that you might show in the topic after you've heard the initial presentations.
I think Arnie just said to me, be brief. So I'll try that. Shakespeare said, when he was talking about roses, what's in a name? And then those of you who know it, know he want to talk about that for a while. Names are interesting things. Creation story, Adam gets to do all the naming, even of Eve, the woman. Today, this morning, Dave Rhodes, in his fascinating study, has Christ going through the naming exercises. Nicknaming, he called it Peter the Rock and so forth. Important kind of concept, naming. An hour or so ago, Walt Jr. gave us a fascinating study of the Indian tale that he told, and you recall the fascinating names and significance that they had in that tale, that story. Barbara, in this evening's worship, calls our attention to the fact that God has our names inscribed in the palm of his hand.
Her hand, excuse me.
There. Thank you for getting at me. I'll get it again when I get home from Jane. The whole concept of naming, I am constantly amazed in my business at the welter of litigation going on right now about names. Who gets to name? What's the significance? One case, just as sort of a place to start off, and then Rich can muse about this for a little bit, then we'll talk about it. The name is one which involves these people. I've identified them up there. One, Elena Jeck, and one, Adolf Beffert. They had a child. They lived in the state of Hawaii, and they wanted to name their child Adrian Jebef, J-E-B-E-F, Jeck Beffert. Combination of the two last names. On the birth certificate, sent in to the state to be registered, Adrian Jebef. Back it came and said, no, you can't do that. We call your attention to a statute in the state of Hawaii that says, all children born in wedlock shall have their father's name as a family name. Jeck and Beffert said, we don't have to do that. It is our prerogative to name the child anything we want to. After all, as Arnie says, whose child is it anyway? the registrar of title says, you do what the statute says. This child will have the father's name. And incidentally, I might call your attention to the fact that the state of Hawaii statute went on to say that when a woman marries a man, her name shall be the name of the husband, period. Litigation resulted. I don't intend to tell you what happened. Federal courts right now, maybe you can find out the end of the story sometime, but I want to hear Rich muse a little bit about the wisdom or lack of wisdom of that statute. And as the judge said in this opinion, after having explained that the state could accommodate these people without violating the law by several devices, or they could indeed simply have registered the child's name as Beffert, and then for $35 have that name change registered, and the child then would have been Adrian Jebbeth. But neither the state nor these two parents would budge. And the judge sits there scratching his head and says, I cannot understand what is so significant that makes these people unwilling to accommodate or use other alternatives and insist upon the power of controlling the name first. Why is that, Rich?
I don't know. Well, let's go home.
I guess just some of the thoughts and reactions I had is, I see our society in transition. I see us moving from being a fairly male-dominated society where men have power and men have control and men rule. And I think that law that says the wife by law has to take the husband's name and that the child has to take the husband's last name clearly supports, and it's the state supporting what I think is a kind of an archaic perspective in our society now, and that is that men are in control, men have the power, men are dominant. We're seeing that transition happening with a lot of the hyphenated names, a lot of the other kinds of changes in the women's movement, and I think following right on the heels of the women's movement is the men's movement. I hope to say some things about that next week, but I think what it means to be a man and what masculinity is all about is up in the air. It's no longer a clear-cut issue. I guess when I first heard about this law, I assumed that was something that was put on the books back in about 1902. What year did that get enacted initially in Hawaii?
1976.
I was shocked. I couldn't believe that in 1976, that's when the law was entered in the books. When was this case brought up?
The same year.
1976. So this is a current issue.
Apparently, Alina and Adolf ran to the courthouse to file their action.
Sure.
How about little Adrian? How is he taking all this? You know, he is a victim of this power struggle, and I think it's important for a kid to have an identity and a name and be secure in that and get over in that, and he's getting jerked around so that people can play games.
I think that's a very interesting observation. A guardian was appointed for him, and he is a party plaintiff in the action. Although, of course, little Adrian is still a wet bundle of noise, just a little teeny fella. Nonetheless, he's there by guardian.
I think, at least where I live in Minnesota, a person's name is a significant label as to their heritage. With a name like Anderson, everybody knows that I'm not Italian. And a lot of people, at least in the small town that I live in, are quite proud of their last name because their ancestors founded the town. And they have names that are significant or that are important. And so I think the issue of name is a real interesting one. And when a woman marries a man, why should she give up her name and abandon her heritage and abandon that part of her identity to assume his? any more than he should do that for her? And why should the child end up with only one of those labels of heritage and not both? I know when we had children, my wife and I struggled with that and decided to put both of our last names on our children's birth certificates, although our children primarily go by my last name.
Here's a comment from good old Pilate. At least our first names are considered our Christian names. And I like, at home, I can't remember last names, so I just connect on first name level. That's the one thing that most, unless I change it, no, I do get it. I don't think that means anything to anybody else, but it means something to me. Because I really do see, you know, we were married almost 20 years ago, and now it's traumatic. It wasn't even an option to me to not change my name. On the other hand, I think the telephone company is too powerful probably for us to get very far with manufacturing our kids' names and the names of their kids. I mean, I don't think they keep up with them. They make us pay for it.
I think it's a way that you might lose touch with your heritage, too. Say for those of us in this room who have had any interest at all in genealogy, that, and that's true certainly of Scandinavians and some other people, as they came to the United States, the intake people, say, at Ellis Island messed with their last names because they couldn't pronounce them or couldn't spell them. And people are frustrated because they get to that point and then they don't know where to go because they don't know what the last name is. They can't follow it through. And I think it would be awfully hard in trying to keep a rein on your heritage. It's hard enough anyway because not many of us had forebears who were good journalists and letter writers and left us a lot of information. And for me, I wouldn't want to take a chance on losing any opportunity to have some link with my heritage by having a whole bunch of made-up names in there to confuse things.
This is not the name aspect of the question, but a question that comes to mind. Who pays for this litigation on the Jack and Beffert? And then yet in the other conversations with the medical discussions, people would go out and bring a suit that costs money, and I would imagine the people are in a great position in the Supreme Court. Who bears the cost of that?
Apparently, the parents are paying their own bill on this one, at least as far as I can tell.
Set off with strong convictions that are appearing to the Supreme Court.
I think it's rather interesting how many of us believe that the state of Hawaii has the right to legislate that. I can hardly believe that a state thinks that it's okay to tell you what you have to name your children.
Are there any other states that have similar statutes?
No, not to my knowledge.
Isn't Hawaii a very male-dominated state?
Well, would it have anything to do, I mean, just a speculation, Hawaii has this melding of all these countries, and they might have had some reason for defining it, just for some unity of paperwork. You know, you don't know, at least, I don't know if you have any background on why that law was enacted, unless it was just a...
Hawaii said, it's a lot easier to keep the records. We have consistency in the names that way. It's much more, you know, administratively convenient. Plus the fact that it simplifies the work of title insurance companies and so forth, the passage of title. And the parents said, that's nice, but the government is there for our convenience. We're not here for the convenience of the government. If we want to keep our name, fine. If we want to change it, we ought to be able to change it. Hawaii said you can't do that. They said we can too. Legislature enacted this statute. They said it's unconstitutional. That's the argument that's going on.
There was some guy in Minnesota who decided to change his name to a number. And he just picked out, I don't know what the number was, 6984. He wanted to just go by that. And how high it all went, there was a big joke in the paper, of course. And I think the courts ruled that he couldn't do it. It was too disruptive. Too many things too unhandy. I guess you've got to have some kind of a thing where it's got to be a decent sort of thing. They couldn't have some blasphemous obscene name, very analytic. I can see having a few basic rules or something about naming.
Well, underneath all of that, to me, lies the question of, does the state own me so that they get to name me? You know, naming in Hosea and in Genesis seems to be an act of possession. Now, I don't mind being possessed by God. I rather trust God. But when somebody else decides they can own me, control me, I get kind of nervous.
Well, do people legally change their names?
Indeed they may.
In the middle of life, in the middle of life, late in life. But
if anytime.
You take stage names, you probably use them as legal names too.
Even in Hawaii, for $35.
I think that issue of control and ownership is significant. The concern I have with people that are abused physically, sexually, whether they're spouses or whether they're children, is that behind that is a lot of belief on the part of the perpetrator that they should be able to control this other person. Or there are many sexual or physical abuse perpetrators who believe that they own their wife or they own their child, and they have the right to dictate what they will do and what they will wear and where they will go, and if they won't do it, they have the right to beat them or abuse them or whatever. And this to me smacks of a similar kind of control and ownership. That's why I was shocked that it happened in 1976.
There was a woman in New York by the name of Cooperman. Cooper Man. And she decided, this was in New York, she decided she didn't want that to be her name. So she asked the court to permit her to change her name to Cooper Person. And the court turned her down, the trial court. She appealed. The Supreme Court of New York held that she was entitled to change her name to Cooper Person. A little bit later, she realized she'd made a mistake and came back and had her name changed to Cooper Daughter. Rather than Cooper per son. But in each instance, she prevailed. The Supreme Court saying that if she wanted a different name, she was entitled to have a different name, as long as she wasn't trying to swindle somebody or cheat somebody. Do you feel that it's with your child, you feel that you've got a right to say my child's name is your name?
I have a question. How far back in society have we had last names? I mean, did the Romans have it? Did they have it at the time of Jesus? Or what? I mean, is this something we've done in the last 5 centuries?
Wasn't Jesus Jesus Joseph's son or something?
I don't know.
Jesus' son Joseph.
Didn't
identifying fact that it wasn't his name.
I defer quickly to all of the theological scholars here, but my understanding is there are only 2 surnames in the Jewish tradition, Levi and one other. And the rest of them were all really first names.
Weren't they identified before more the king?
Yes. Bar Jonah, Bar Joseph, Bar somebody, son of.
Yeah,
I don't know what they did for women, I'm sorry.
I think just in the last 100 years, that, for example, in Scandinavian countries, when a lot of the immigration was happening 100 years ago, you would take your father's name, and your son would take your own name. The name, the last name would change every generation. And it was only in the last 75, 100 years that in those countries, they kind of fixed last name.
Which in fact makes it hard to follow the genealogy of Scandinavian. It's not easy to trace.
Here in the front.
In Iceland, they still go by the first name of the parent. And if Hilda could give Peterson, because her father's name, because her father was Peter, first name Peter, so she becomes Hilda Peterdaughter. And then the son in the same family becomes Peter's son. Could be Bill the Peter's son. And that becomes confusing, but it seems to work there.
What does Hilda's name become when she marries?
Pardon?
What does Hilda's name become when she marries?
As I understand it, it is still the father, the Peter daughter.
And if Hilda has a child, then Hilda's husband?
Yeah.
Name?
It could be Ludwig's son or
and the mother's just isn't in there.
As I understand it, I'm not an authority, but that's how it was explained to me.
But in the telephone book, I think the woman's name is listed with her as her as Finn's daughter. She's in there separately from her husband's name, so you have to know the wife's father's name in order to look her up in the telephone book. So it really is confusing.
Is that more sensitive to the personhood of the wife and the husband? I mean, have we really gone sour?
Well, you still got the child named after the husband, though.
Yeah. One of my students did a paper for me a couple of years ago on one of the countries in South America where you have the hyphenated name, and all daughters born take the mother's family name, all sons take the father's name, and then they marry and hyphenate, and then you go through that process. So you track down girls through mothers, boys through fathers.
Where?
It's one of the South American countries. I'm sorry to say, I forgot which one.
Any Spanish country? Yeah. Do
you
go
right.
by the mother's
name? Because I read recently that in Russia, 50% of the couples getting married take the wife's name. 50% take the husband's name.
Could be.
And they pick it on the basis of which name sounds the best or has the most. But it's supposed to be almost a 50-50 split.
The product of Quebec in Canada, it is actually not possible for a woman legally to take her husband's name. And the women often will take it on colloquially, as they will be called Mrs. Smith, but legally they must retain their own family name. It's kind of an interesting version. Again,
and what are the children named then?
The children still take the father's name, but the women themselves retain their family.
You like that?
Yeah, I do.
You'd have no objection to your children having your husband's name.
Oh, I didn't mean, I think maybe that is restrictive. I think it's maybe good that the women keep their own name. That's what I was just saying.
But the woman's last name ends on her lineage of the tree then, doesn't it? I think that's what he said. You like that?
No, I don't. I don't think that.
One thing that maybe a little more inflammatory about it is that whenever you read this stuff, newspapers or here and there, and parents both have separate names and all of that, and then there's the kids, then it's always confusing. But that, and you wonder if people suspect whether they're legitimate or not, that is, whether the parents are married. And I think it's kind of a burden for the kids to have to explain all that all the time. And people may kind of wonder about it, and if they don't know them and all that kind of stuff. And it's, I don't know if you hear the kids having sensitivity about that, or whether everybody just so used to it these days. No big deal. You know, has anybody heard a reaction?
Well,
I asked my kids, and I like what he said, experienced almost 20 years ago, and didn't really, wasn't even aware of the option, and kept my maiden name as part of my formal name only because I was still in school, and records would get confused. I want to make sure that I graduated. We don't carry a hyphenated name, and that we do it to our children, but I think if I were getting married today, I'd probably do that. But my kids said the only problem they had with it was then they have a hyphenated double name, and they marry someone with a hyphenated double name, then you have quadruple names, and then, you know, on and on. So that was really their only question, but they could see the value of why I grieve the loss of my heritage in terms of their name, because that's what's powerful to me. I really do grieve that.
Well, I only read two things in the world, the comic strips and decisions of courts. And the comic strips are not terribly helpful right now, but many cases arise today where a woman or a man remarries and carries a child with the first name into a family. Let's say a woman remarries and she was a Smith in her first marriage, and now she marries Jones, and they have a child, and she sends her two children off to school and registers Susie Smith and Peter Jones. And there's a certain amount of problems there, too.
If I could throw something on a funny light of this, last night we talked about divorce, and you just talked about it a minute ago. A couple of years ago, I was working on my 20th high school reunion, trying to find people, trying to find women is hard. And I finally found this one girl, and she says, "How in the world did you ever find me? I've been married 6 times since high school." I said, "I found you through your aunt." Her name changed every time.
I did, you know, I laughed when you talked about that girl that changed her name Cooper. My maiden name was Brinkman, and I worked for a doctor who used to call me Brink Person. And I had a girlfriend who was, we were all into this, you know, we thought this was great, you know, just to have the man to be their Brink daughter or whatever. And she her name was Mary Lou Pierce, and type name was Dickerson, and we just thought she should be Dicker daughter. And we just thought that was just great. So anyway, but I've come through that, but now I'm married and I took my husband's name, and I feel it's a sense of, I could have kept my own name. It was not, you know, it was not anything that, it was something that we decided to do. And there's a sense of unity that in our family, and unity between us and our children. And I just think it's a real positive thing that we all have this thing in aid. You know, we're a unified family. We're different. We're individuals. And you'd ask the question, would we let our children change their name? I think when they were legally of age, if that was their choice, they could do that. But not in the process of building a family, not at 13 or 12, you know, because they had gotten an idea. But if they became an adult and decided that was what they wanted to do, but it really, to me, symbolizes and the love that we share as a family. We sacrifice lots of things. And for us, that's...
I think one of the core issues you're talking about, and you were talking about, is that people have a lot of identity attached to the label. There's a lot of self-identity with your heritage or with your parents or your family you came from. There's a lot of identity that you attach to the family you now live in. That all has one name, and so you're all identified as so-and-so. But I think it's a real issue for a lot of people to give up that identity and to try to move into another one.
It wasn't without these adjustments for me. I mean, there is an adjustment to doing that.
I suppose another alternative is that you, two of you, decide to pick a third one that is neither yours nor his. That really messed things up.
It seems to me that one of the issues behind some of this is choice. if the state tells me I have to, or my physician tells me I have to, or my future spouse tells me I have to, and I will put that in the future 20 years, my daughter or her daughter telling her future spouse that he has to take her name. I mean, it could be completely reversed. Seems to me the issue is having to do it, that you really have to, that this is, and I think that if you have a choice, then I feel like I keep very much, you know, got that kind of sense of, well, we can live under a single identifying name without it having to be just your name or just my name, whatever, even if it is the same name. We're creating a new identity here. And in some ways, besides the fact that you give up something, you grieve the loss of, or I did, but at the same time, I was given a kind of freedom that I don't believe Jen will ever quite have. Because, in a sense, I broke with my family. And I went through a process of recognizing that, that there's something significant happening here when I marry into another, you know, future family. And although both of you do that when you marry, there is something, I don't know what it is. It's not quite so abstract. It's the language of we will become one flesh, one spirit. We will be happy. I mean, I'm really literally giving up something in order to do that. And there may be good argument for both people doing something like that. I don't know.
Yes. Speaking on behalf of hyphenated names, our youngest son and his wife elected to use the hyphenated names. And when his brothers and sisters jumped all over him saying, why? His answer was, we are making a statement about the equality of our relationship. And I don't think it had anything to do with, you know, heritage, but it had to do with the statement that they were making about the relationship, which they held before society. And that's another reason.